This is the one with a garden party.
And singing in Hungarian.
And pterodactyls.
Vortisaurs, please.
It's called No More Lies.
Here we go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tom Odawar, Dalek, Spacetime and Glam Rock.
Stylophones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are godly good. We'll review them all you'll see, so join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When.
Who back when?
Hello and welcome to episode A005 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm John David, and joining me today is Pumpkin.
Hello. How you doing, JD?
I'm fine, thank you. Today, we'll be talking about No More Lies by Paul Sutton.
Yes, we are. I think I already spoiled this last week, or last time, last year. Oh my god, Happy New Year, people. I like this one.
So far, this'll be continuing the original Star Trek movies, in that every alternate one has been very good, and the ones in between haven't. So thankfully, this next week will break that, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I like this one as well. It was very good. So shall we jump right into our bite-sized chunk of really needing a jingle?
Yes, apologies. Still no jingle. Do you want to start or shall I start? Up to you.
You start.
Okie dokie. So we start off mid-action as the Doctor and Lucy materialize aboard a time-traveling spaceship in hot pursuit of a time-tech thief named Dr. Zimmerman.
On board, we also find a band of Tarmadoc, who are time-eating, time-sensitive aliens, who live inside the vortex and use pterodactyl-like creatures for public transport.
Zimmerman escapes, and the Doc and Lucy follow him to, surprise, surprise, Earth, where he's hosting a garden party and has apparently aged about 30 years.
But the Tarmadoc also about to arrive, and our protagonists decide to crash the party.
Kablamo. Aha. Uh-huh. Should have made some cucumber sandwiches for this one, I think.
Yes, but you also, when we were doing the bite-sized chunk of food, decided to give me every line where it says the word Tarmadoc. Knowing full well I can't pronounce it. So, thank you for that one.
We can re-record it if you like. I'm not
I just have to really concentrate on getting that right.
I'm glad that you got those lines. I would have said Tarmadawox.
Tarmadawox, which is actually what I've been trying not to say for the past couple of days.
It's so, in the theme song. Okay.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, so No More Lies by Paul Sutton. Now, Paul Sutton is quite a prolific writer of Doctor Who audiobooks. He's done quite a few.
Yeah, but I recall the name. You've mentioned it before.
Yeah, one of his audiobooks is called The Angel of Scutari, which is generally considered one of the best Doctor Who audiobooks.
Okay.
It's a seventh Doctor one, but it's generally considered to be one of the best historical stories, irrespective of whether it's in audio or visual. So, hopefully one day you'll listen to that one. So, there's no title sequence this week. There's no pre-title sequence. We jump straight into a title sequence and then straight into the action.
Yeah. I love the title sequence, by the way. The audiobook. I don't know if it differs from other Doctor audio adventures, but I love it. It is, like, grungy and pretty badass.
Yeah, it does. When Big Finish started doing the audiobooks, they used the Tom Baker theme tune for about, I think it must have been about a year or 2 years. And then they started putting the theme tune of that Doctor on the titles.
Okay.
With the exception of the Eighth Doctor Adventures, which has its own pretty unique title sequence.
Nice. Yeah, good choice.
So we start off with the TARDIS materializing aboard a McDonald's time vessel. We're obviously in mid-action at the moment.
Yeah. Time has passed since we last met the Doc and Lucy.
Yeah, they're in the middle of doing things. This is now gone from being a mismatched pairing to being two people who are traveling time and solving adventures together.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's recovered from the adrenaline kaputs and is now chasing after someone called Zimmerman.
Yeah. Let's just take a moment to ponder his surname, because this is a guy who is a space alien and he has a fairly typical Jewish surname.
Lots of planets have a north, so maybe...
fair enough.
Maybe lots of planets have Jewish surnames. Yes. You know, or maybe his surname is, in fact, 400 words long and the TARDIS translation circuits are translating it to Zimmerman.
That's very true. Man of Rooms.
That's very interesting. Who back when teaching you other languages while listening to Doctor Who podcast?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, okay. So this guy, Zimmerman, he's a time technology thief, basically. He goes around time and space, nicks gadgets that somehow deal with time travel, and then sells them to the highest bidder.
And what they seem to be having a problem with is a group of creatures called the Tarmaduok. And
it's beautiful pronunciation.
Yeah, I'm not teasing you.
I don't know how it's pronounced.
No, but don't you have one of your nicknames for them? Because out of everything that's so far been in Doctor Who, of the 14 classic episodes and this now fifth audiobook review, if anything needed one of your nicknames, this does.
We'll think of one. We'll think of one during the course of this episode.
So anyway, these Tarmaduoks are quite hungry, and they sound on the screen very imposing. They say that they can smell time.
Yeah.
So the Doctor and Lucy are obviously trying to get away from them. They're hunting Zimmerman, but you know, we get a really good line from Lucy saying that the Doctor is always looking at her bum.
Yeah.
And the Doctor quite vehemently denies it, but for some strange reason, for most of this episode, we get lots of descriptions of Lucy's backside. So yeah. I think Paul Sutton might be trying to say something about Sheridan Smith's backside. Anyway, Zimmerman is trying to steal the ship, and the
ship is of a third civilization's technology. What are they called?
McDonald's. I've got written. I have no idea. It's something with an M, but weirdly, this is one of the few times where you're listening to the episode and the sound effects almost drown out the wording of what.
Yeah, in the beginning, this sort of chase sequence in the beginning, there are noises going on like all over the place.
Yeah, it's not a bad set of sound effects, but you are obviously in the middle of some, you know, big spaceship. There's lots of things attacking. There's lots of bleeping. There's people inside spacesuits. It's actually quite difficult to hear some of what's going on. It doesn't really detract from the action.
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, okay, maybe I'm just, I was going to say a slow reader. Maybe I'm just a slow listener, because I listened to this audiobook a few times, I think 3 times in total. And it wasn't until, at the very least, the second time I was listening to the intro that I fully comprehended what was going on, because there are bleeps, there's the Doctor, there's Lucy, there's Zimmerman, there's the Tarmaduok, whatever, and there are explosions and things.
I didn't have a problem listening to it, and this is actually, No More Lies is one of the few where I've actually only really needed to listen to it once, which is probably why I don't know the name of the aliens, but I actually found that the sound effects on the spaceship needed to be so claustrophobic for what is about to happen next.
Yeah, okay, so you're talking about the splitting up trope.
Yes.
Well, Zimmerman, he is basically like, he's trying to escape. So in doing so, he jeopardizes both the Doctor's and Lucy's health, because he's putting the ship in a position of like imminent depressurization. But before doing so, he presses a few buttons and, like, I'm assuming some sort of security door just shoots down and separates the two.
Yeah. And then we cut quite harshly to a spring day in a garden. There is the sound of birds chirping in the distance, the slight smell of lavender in the air, and as cucumber sandwiches and champagne, as the glorious Rachel.
You look like you're in your element describing this scene. Ladies and gentlemen, just take my word for it. It's like you're reminiscing. There was this wonderful time at the English mansion, the country estates, where people, like, waiters were serving up cucumber sandwiches and gin martinis.
But that's what you get. You actually really do get this, because it's such a dramatic change.
It is.
From the spaceship. And on you know, the first few bits of this garden party, and we skip between the spaceship and the garden party a few times.
Yeah, in the beginning.
The garden party is just this quiet oasis, and then you hit back to the spaceship.
Crazy action of the spaceship.
It's crazy action. It's great.
By the time you go back to the spaceship, it's sort of like, oh yeah, right, that was going on.
That was going on.
It's like, it's almost like we've been listening to a completely different story. But okay, so we're at the garden party, or we're just sort of in the periphery of the garden party, where the hostess, namely Rachel, as you said, she's walked up to her brother, who's just sulking outside of the family mausoleum, and he's talking about how he says it's something about his father. His father is, I presume, or their father is buried inside, but he says, don't worry about it, I'm still in control of the situation. And what we learn from this is basically, well, it's twofold. A, column A, he has a limp, he is injured. And column B, he is in charge of security for the party, which is kind of weird. It's like, this is a garden party. Why have you employed your brother, of all people, to handle security?
Well, we do find out right at the end that Gordon, who is the brother, is in fact Inspector Gordon Davison. We also find out later on that he's an ex-soldier.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe garden parties in this particular part of Earth require a lot of security. I don't know.
If it's her birthday, is it? That's what it is, right? So would you not employ someone who isn't immediately related to you to handle security so that your brother could partake in the festivities, as opposed to sulk outside a family mausoleum and consider, like, points of entry by terrorists or whoever?
I'd hire the best person for the job.
No one better than someone depressed and sulking outside a mausoleum.
He gets told to pick up thy walking stick and thy plastic hip and enjoy himself.
Yeah, and this is actually a really nice little bit of banter here, because she sees her husband, Nick. He turns up, tells him, listen, my brother's a little bit sulky. He's getting better, but he's still kind of, well, he's feeling a bit blue. Why don't you see if you can perk him up a little bit? Nick goes up to Gordon, Flash, as he's actually going to be called later on, and it says, I cannot remember the exact phrasing, but he says something like, listen, I love you like a brother-in-law, and Flash goes, you are my brother-in-law. That's they have a nice little bit of banter anyway.
I think, you know, this entire scene is quite lovely. Mm. You know, it wouldn't be out of place in Midsummer Murders. But we have our now trio of guest stars all in one place.
Yeah.
We'll start off with Gordon.
Okay.
Mainly because Gordon is played by Tom Chadbourne. Tom Chadbourne has been in Doctor Who before as the absolutely wonderful Duggan in City of Death. He also had the smaller part as Medine in Trial of a Time Lord. But his big Doctor Who role was as Duggan in City of Death. City of Death at Tom Baker.
Okay.
It was set in Paris. It is generally considered one of the best Doctor Who episodes. It's up there with Caves of Androzani and Genesis of the Daleks.
Huh.
It is also one of the most watched episodes of Doctor Who.
Okay.
And Tom Chadbourne sounds on this audiobook exactly as he did as Duggan. To a point where I am listening to this, and had they have renamed him as Inspector Duggan, it would have been the same character. They would have not had to change any lines. He's a British actor. He turns up from time to time in British drama series, but he is one of those sort of Doctor Who treasures that when they turn up, you are quite grateful for being there.
Okay.
Rachel, on the other hand, has never been in Doctor Who before, which is quite strange for the guest stars we have here. She's Julia McKenzie, who has played Miss Marple. She's a Tony Award nominee. You know, she's one of these big theatre people. She's an amazing person.
Is she the Miss Marple from the Miss Marple TV show?
She is currently playing Marple playing Miss Marple in the Marple TV show on ITV.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
And
I think
finally,
we found a nickname for her. All right.
Yes. And well, she does actually, she even sounds like Miss Marple. and then finally, we have Nick. And Nick is played by the British national treasure of Nigel Havers.
Yep.
He has been in Doctor Who.
Has he?
Okay. Yes. He has starred with Doctor Who. He has starred with David Tennant as the 10th Doctor. but in the Sarah Jane Adventures. He played Sarah Jane Smith's husband in The Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith.
Okay.
Because it starred David Tennant, it was one of the most watched episodes of the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But Nigel Havers is one of these British character actors who, irrespective of what he is in and what he plays, cannot play anything nice. Spoilers.
Oh, I don't know. He's in Empire of the Sun.
He's also in Charmer, and one of the things around the time is that his real life was almost being mimicked by what was happening on his on-screen life. So he's got one of these sort of smarmy faces that you really want to punch. But thankfully it's an audiobook and don't. But he is obviously a great British actor. And so this has a very good trio of guest stars this week.
Nice. Excellent actor trivia tangents, as per usual. Thank you. So anyway, Kablamatron, we cut back to the spaceship.
And more talking about Lucy's backside.
Really?
Yes.
I've forgotten that.
Yeah, well, there are 3 points in this story where they mention Lucy's backside, because she now says the doctor shouldn't be looking at her derriere as they're running down the corridor. So
actually, isn't this where they get separated?
This is where they get separated.
Yeah, this is where they get separated. Anyway, so yeah, cut back to the spaceship, Blammo, spoiler alert from before, they get separated because Zimmerman presses a few buttons. But Lucy, being on, I guess, Zimmerman's side of the door, or closer to him in some way, goes, you know what? I don't care. I know that you're telling me to stay here and figure things out, Doc, but I'm going to go and kick some Zimmerman ass. So she just runs off.
And the doctor says that he pretty much feels sorry for Zimmerman because he's got a Lucy Miller on his tail.
Yep. Cut back to Brideshead, where Nick, Miss Marple, and Flash are returning to the party. And, they're having some cucumber sandwiches. Everything's really nice. And we get one line here that is of relative relevance. Nick is quoted by Flash as saying, if there's no way of getting around something, you've got to plow straight through it. This apparently is one of his sort of catchphrases, his mantra. This will come into play in just a tiny little bit.
And then they all agree that tomorrow they're going to go down the pub and have a nice, relaxing afternoon.
Yeah.
But what happens then is we're getting that...
We get hints.
Yeah, we're getting that Nick's having a bit of deja vu about this entire thing.
Yeah.
That he's had this conversation with Gordon before.
That's true.
Meanwhile, back in the spaceship...
Yeah. The doctor he's gotten out from behind the door, I think. Goes up to Zimmerman. Does he go up to Zimmerman? Lucy goes up to Zimmerman.
Yeah, the doctor and Zimmerman are, I think, talking over the radio.
That's it. Sorry. I can't believe I even admitted to having listened to this 3 times, because clearly my mind may have been elsewhere. Anyway, Lucy approaches Zimmerman, notes that he is now donning a spacesuit, the color of which she disapproves of because it does not feature in the Primark range. And then he literally whips out a weapon. It is a whip, a time whip. Tries to use it on Lucy, fails though, nothing happens, and we get a little bit of techno babble where she explains that she is, quote, not a full-blown time sensitive.
And time sensitives have been mentioned in Doctor Who before.
Oh, really?
The Farrells in Warrior's Gate were mentioned as being time sensitive. One of the audiobooks that was the very first one of Paul McGann.
Yeah.
Not in this range, but the other Big Finish range was called Storm Warning.
Okay.
And that contains Vortisaurs.
Yep.
And time sensitives. Not the Tarmadoc, but it was one of these things where there's a bit of synchronicity between them.
Yeah, I read that actually. There's a reference to that later on, I think. Anyway, Zimmerman has a plan, and that is to escape. He's going to jettison one of the escape pods. He's already sort of rigged it with all the technology that he wants to steal. But Lucy, not being affected by this time whip, goes up to the controls and says, if you do not stop right now, I'm going to start pressing buttons and we're all going to blow up together.
And then sadly, Lucy's really good plan that probably would have worked is ruined by the doctor turning up.
Yeah, and Zimmerman immediately time whipping the doctor.
So Lucy's backside and bondage in one episode.
Hot. Alright, so anyway, Zimmerman now has the upper hand. He threatens to zap the Doctor beyond belief unless Lucy, basically steps away, and she does.
Basically, he leaves. And yeah. We discover that previously, the Doctor couldn't get through the temporal shielding on the ship. And
there's so much technobabble.
Yeah, it's technobabble. But we find out that it was Lucy Miller's idea of how to get on board the ship.
Yeah,
treating it as more technobabble.
She says, "Well, I mean, there were temporal waves or something, so I figured, well, if waves are like water, you can always put up a dam to prevent water from going on. So I figured, let's build a temporal dam. What? I don't know.
Have no idea. But for the next 3 minutes." We get technobabble on top of technobabble with more technobabble, and then Zimmerman leaves.
Yeah, that's
but
okay.
Not before saying that, you know, one of his favorite phrases, which is, if there is no way of getting round something, you've just got to plow straight through it.
Bingo. Zimmerman is Nick. Spoilers.
But considering they're both played by Nigel Havers.
And the way it is presented in the story, it is actually pretty freaking obvious. But still, very cool. And I applaud the attempt to conceal it.
So Lucy and the Doctor run away from the control deck because basically the ship's going to explode.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, at Miss Marple's house, Nick Zimmerman goes over and starts doing one of those speeches that people do at weddings and parties and has a microphone.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, the event is all about Rachel and, you know,
he loves her very much and all these friends are there. So how better to celebrate her than to get her to sing?
Which would be fine for, you know, she has a lovely voice, but for most people, that would be the most cringeworthy, embarrassing moment of their life.
Yeah.
Thus indicating that Nick really has to be an arch villain. Meanwhile,
By the way, she must enjoy singing. She is not self-conscious in any way, even though, and I have to say this, the song is a complete bummer. I mean, it is depressingly bad.
I thought it was quite good. I didn't understand
really?
A word. I didn't understand a word of it.
It's in Hungarian.
It's foreign.
It's in Hungarian. And according to what I saw online, it is actually some Hungarian love poem, which has then been set to some tune. But not speaking Hungarian, I don't know what it's about. I don't know if the pronunciation is accurate or deplorable. But Jesus Christ, I feel like she should be self-conscious for singing in front of all these people, basically.
But luckily, as the song starts, we go back to the spaceship.
Well, you say as the song starts, we need to endure about 30 seconds of this song before we go back to the spaceship. But at which point, all the bleeping and exploding and the tar monowalks going, I will eat your time, is actually a welcome treat.
I would have liked to have listened to more of the song. It should have gone on in the background.
You know what? I'm going to sample this song. I'm going to send it to you. And I want you to use it as your 2014 ringtone.
Meanwhile, on the spaceship.
Yep.
The Doctor and Lucy Miller are confronted by the alien of the week, the Tarmadoc. And, they do quite well with the sound effects of the Tarmadoc. In that they actually physically sound big and imposing.
They've
done very well at this.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the creatures can smell time and smell who has traveled through time.
We get a little technical term here, a chronosynthesis. They absorb and feed on time, the way that flowers need sunlight.
Technobabble aside,
yeah.
the Tarmadoc are distracted by the escape pod going away and the ship blowing up, and the Doctor and Lucy use the few seconds of distraction to go in board the TARDIS and dematerialize.
Yeah.
And we get the TARDIS dematerializing, we get the Tarmadoc leader looking at it and going, damn you, I would have eaten you if it hadn't been for, you know, just one of those little moments.
You damn pesky kids. But we don't come back to the party just yet. They dematerialize and then, I guess, rematerialize, having followed the pod, more or less. And where are they?
They're at a garden party in England.
Yeah, well, they're orbiting the Earth.
Yes.
Yeah, they're orbiting the Earth. Which part of the Earth are we going to? Oh, England. Okay. And they also note that not only is there like some sort of energy focal point on the Earth, somewhere in the, I'm going to say Surrey, somewhere south
of
London.
Yeah, I imagined it was in Surrey as well. And yeah. It was a warm summer's day and the river was trickling down the brook with the summer house next to it.
I'm going to set all of your little soliloquies about the garden party to music. I'm just warning you. But not only do they notice this, they also notice that literally hundreds of Tarmodawoks, or however you pronounce it, are approaching the planet, riding these pterodactyl-like vortisaurs. Very cool, by the way. Getting some Flash Gordon vibes there as well.
Very, 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 very much so. And, you know, they're having this conversation. And it's only for a few seconds, but in the background, you can hear the unmistakable ringing of the TARDIS cloister bell.
Yeah.
Which means that there is a rather large, massive, imminent danger to everything.
Bingo.
Back at the garden party, the Hungarian is continuing.
Oh, God. Miss Marple just will not stop.
So we have another minute, probably to you, half an hour, it felt like,
yeah.
of Hungarian singing. Back on, honestly,
wait,
it's literally.
Wait. There is a way to settle this. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you a soundbite of the Hungarian, possibly faux Hungarian song. Soundbite.
Soundbite.
There you are. Make up your minds for yourselves. Anyway.
So, literally, the only bit we get here is some Hungarian, and then we go back to the TARDIS again. And the Doctor and Lucy, as a team, work together to break through this strange temporal anomaly.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's telling Lucy what to do, and Lucy's pressing buttons on the console, and Lucy says that there's been a temporal reoccurrence. The Doctor says, not now.
Yeah, whatever. Not important. I wonder if that's going to turn up later on. I've got a question for you before you go on, though, because what you just said, I'm not entirely sure how it works. There is some kind of barrier, right? In getting to the Earth, there is something in the way, presumably whatever this little temporal recurrence thing is. But they also did say they saw hundreds of Tarmodawok approaching the Earth.
Yeah.
How can they approach the Earth? And we do also learn that it is difficult for them to get through. How can they be approaching the Earth if they are inside the vortex, they live inside the vortex, and there is something shielding Brideshead?
There are two things here. First of all, the Vortisaurs break off their attack onto Earth the moment the TARDIS turns up because it is full of
like temporal
time energy.
Chrononuclei.
Yes, and the other thing is that the Vortisaurs, the Tarmodawok live inside the time vortex. What is happening on Earth, we don't know about yet, but we will soon, is causing almost feedback into the time vortex. Because what is happening on Earth should not be happening. So there's a link there to the vortex. But
okay.
it is very difficult for the Tarmodawok to get through. And there's like a shield of time around this garden party.
Okay, cool.
Lucy lands the TARDIS.
Amazing. Why is she landing the TARDIS?
Because the Doctor was getting rid of the Tarmodawok, and she does it better than the Doctor.
Yes.
Because she lands the TARDIS, she gets out, she sees Zimmerman, who's 30 years older than 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, on the scanner, they have clearly now upgraded to 1080p.
Yes. Lucy does what she always does and storms out of the TARDIS and points out that she parked it quite discreetly in the flower beds, behind some trees, and not in the middle of a road, on the side of a mountain, on the side of a mountain again, or in the middle of a street.
Yeah.
So basically, instantly, she's a far better driver than the Doctor ever is.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor gives the most stupid bit of advice to Lucy ever.
What's
having
that?
Known her for 5 weeks, don't be obtrusive.
Oh, yeah. How long have you been travelling around space and time with this girl? Anyway, at this point, they notice the Tom Modwalk leader. He doesn't have a name, by the way, right? He's just the leader. He turns up, he's riding a Vortisaur, sniffing the air, and we get a little sort of, I guess, cutscene of inside the vortex. All of the Tom Modwalk are now suddenly aware of their leader having crossed this barrier. He is now basically on Earth.
And then that's all we get. And we now cut back to Hungarian. Believe it or not, it's still going on, so which makes this song about half an hour long. But thankfully, we only get some bits of it.
Yeah.
And she gets applause. And I will point out here that she's getting genuine, loving applause for the sound of her voice and the wonderful song.
Yeah, I just also want to point out that probably, I'm guessing that the song was recorded at a separate occasion. This is an audiobook, dude. It's not a documentary. These people do not know what they're applauding. Do you need another soundbite? I am utterly convinced that this song is rubbish.
No, you know, the audience will have now made up their own minds on this, just like I have.
It sounds a little bit like someone transcribed the noise of running a cat through a cheese grater and then asked Google Translate to read it out loud.
I think you need to listen to this audiobook again.
Okay,
so anyway, the doctor...
By the way, apologies. Like, if we have any Hungarian listeners out there in podcast land, I am in no way trying to disparage your language. I think you have a beautiful language, by the way. Closely related to Finnish, and I'm half Finnish myself. I have a particular fondness for Hungarian. But this song is... I cannot stop telling you how dreadful this song is. It's like someone is driving a tractor fueled by the tears of every single dying person ever at the instant of realizing their mortality in the history of man.
We don't get any more of this beautiful song. And the Doctor and Lucy, who hopefully you've not forgotten about after the past 5 minutes of digression.
Sorry.
It's not only my job. The Doctor and Lucy are trying to be unobtrusive. Unfortunately, the first person that they come across is Inspector Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Who wants to see their invitations. Now, Lucy tries to lie, but frankly, it fails miserably.
Yeah, and clearly he must recognize them as intruders. And it's his sister's birthday. He probably knows everyone who's there.
And the Doctor's a fop in a wig, and Lucy's wearing a boob tube from Primark.
Yeah.
They probably do not fit in the classical Bride's Head revisited Miss Marple's small village in Surrey with the babbling brook and the shining trees. So,
I half expected Paul McGann to say something like, I almost expected them to be sitting out back, sipping tea and discussing butter.
Gordon, this point, we get another hint of what's going on here by saying that this is like the first unexpected thing that's happened in years. And Lucy typically says, what, you're trying to chat me up? You're old enough to be my granddad? So Lucy's back to being Lucy again.
Yeah, but the Doctor is intrigued by this and starts sort of questioning him. Like, do you feel like you've done everything you've done today a million times already? And Flash basically just confirms. He's like, yeah, kind of, but that's just what a deja vu is, isn't it?
And then the Doctor turns around and goes, aha! I remember what you said 15 minutes ago, Lucy, about the temporal reoccurrence. We're inside a time loop.
Yep.
I really wanted Lucy to turn around and go, well, I told you that. Anyway, Rachel is a bit unwell.
Yeah.
She's gone for a lie down, taking Nick with her.
Yeah, he helps her into the master bedroom.
And then cut back to the Doctor, wondering why, for whatever reason, someone would time loop a garden party so we can hear the singing over and over again.
Oh, please don't get me started on the singing.
You know, what would have been better is if we really had a time loop in this episode and we got to hear that at the start of every segment. That would have been brilliant. But basically, they're both blaming Dr. Zimmerman. And the Doctor says, right, I want to go and talk to Zimmerman now.
Wait, hang on. This might be later on in the story, but doesn't the Doctor also theorize that someone else may have done this to him?
Yeah, no, it's this is the exact point that happens, that this is someone's time looped him, or there was an accident when his pod landed, or, you know, something like that. And they go through yet more techno babble.
Yeah. The main gist of which is that every single time that it loops around, the fabric of whatever it is that's keeping the Tom Otterwok out is getting thinner and thinner. So slowly but surely, that barrier is eroding and they are getting closer and closer to the Earth.
And basically they said that, you know, none of the people here know that they're repeating themselves. Zimmerman is very intelligent. He's quite wise about time. He wouldn't have set the loop up by accident. Therefore, someone has done this deliberately to keep Zimmerman at this nauseatingly beautiful garden party. And frankly, if I'm being time looped, I would love to be at this garden party.
Yeah,
as
me
well.
Too. Up until the point where pterodactyls storm in and these dudes turn up to suck the time out of my body.
Oh, so that's fine. So you'd be quite happily at the time looped garden party where you have to listen to the singing.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be at the audience with. Oh, god damn it! How dare you? How dare you? Beaten up my own game. Anyway, so Gordon, he refuses at first. He's like, no, okay, listen, you guys want to see Dr. Zimmerman, I'm sorry, but you don't have an invitation, blah, blah, blah. So then the doctor NLPs him, and Gordon goes, yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, I'll take you right up to see Nick. And Lucy at this point kind of congratulates / berates the doctor for being a manipulative bastard.
And, you know, it was basically Seventh Doctor all over again at this point. You know, it was that level of manipulation.
Yeah.
Or Derren Brown. Meanwhile,
How cool was it that Derren Brown turned up in Sherlock, by the way?
That was really cool.
I love Derren Brown. Okay.
This is not the Sherlock you were looking for. nice. So, meanwhile,
yeah.
On the tennis courts of death, two people are enjoying a game of tennis.
Yeah.
On the tennis court. And
Mr. Tom Otterwok leader, sir, turns up and sucks the time out of them.
You don't actually know how this time suckage occurs.
Oh, that sounds
But
good.
It sounds brutally nasty.
I don't know. The way you just phrased it sounded pretty good to me. Okay.
Anyway, Gordon goes to talk to Nick and says that there's the doctor and Lucy are downstairs and wants to talk to him.
Yeah.
So in the garden, you know, the weather's changing. It's gone from being a beautiful sunny day to being sort of wet and miserable. And as the party
and dark and very convenient in terms of setting up a darkish like action sequence. Spoiler alert, people.
Lucy guesses that the Tarmadoc are being brought in by this reoccurring time anomaly. And she is on. She in this episode is coming up with all the actual ideas that turn out to be true for a change.
Yeah.
So they see Gordon and Zimmerman coming towards them.
Oh, wait, hang on. Dude Meister, we did skip one thing. Sorry. When the Tom Otterwok leader, sir, sucks the time out of the tennis couple of doom, he also starts sniffing the air and realizes that, because he can smell time, right? So he realizes that whatever it is that he's looking for, we don't yet really know what that is coming from the mausoleum. And he starts trying to, well, perform a B&E on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry. And then, boom, fast forward.
So,
Doc and Lucy downstairs.
Yeah, Doc and Lucy downstairs. The doctor suggests Lucy go and have a look around. And the doctor talks to Zimmerman. And they're having a really nice, sort of pleasant stroke, threatening conversation.
Super pleasant at first. And Nick seems to be probably the nicest arch nemesis you could ever possibly want.
They even suggest that they go down to the summer house by the stream. And even though it is slightly raining and it's gone a bit dark, they go down so they can sit down and have pims and talk about the situation. Anyway, Lucy is Miss Marpling around the house. And
ironically,
she comes across
Miss Marple.
they actually have a really nice conversation.
Yeah, they do.
And, you know, Rachel thinks Lucy's having an affair.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that and get back to that a little bit later.
Okay. And then says, basically, oh, you're here to break in and steal everything, which Lucy takes offense at because she's Northern.
Yeah, Miss Marple's like, hey, listen, I'm Miss Marple. I solve crime for a living. Actually, not for a living, as a hobby. And you're walking around without an invitation, sneaking around my house. What else can I expect?
then she gets a bit worse in her illness. And Lucy is quite concerned. She offers to go and get a doctor.
And she goes, wait, no, don't get the doctor. I told Nick, and he even promised me that he wouldn't get a doctor.
And then Lucy says, no, it's okay. Don't worry about it. This doctor's my friend.
Yeah.
And Rachel says, ah, this must be the Lucy I've heard so much about.
Ooh, the plot thickens.
Meanwhile, at the Summer House of Pleasantness, Nick and the doctor sit down and they're having their pims, and the doctor thinks, right, this is the bit where you try and convince me that you're a nice guy and you've settled down on Earth and you're all happy. And no.
Yeah.
The doctor's having none of this.
Well, wait, hang on. Sorry. This little bit, I feel like we should elaborate on just a tiny little bit, because it harkens back to the pin that we popped into the plot a moment ago. So Nick goes, listen, I'm settled down. I have a wife. I have friends. I've spent 30 years here and I'm very happy. I'm a changed man. Like all that kerfuffle that we had in the vortex and the spaceship before, that happened to me ages ago. I hadn't thought about that in 30 years. And he doesn't really apologize, but he does seem to have turned over a new leaf. And then he goes, listen, I'm just your average Joe. I even cheated on my wife once and she forgave me. So wait, what the shit?
This is just a bit weird, because
yeah,
apparently him cheating on his wife means that he is just as evil as the rest of the planet.
Yeah, or just as good. And Miss Marple, having caught her husband cheating on her at some point in the past 30 years, she's now so over it that she's happy to joke about Lucy possibly having an affair with Nick. As though it were nothing.
Well, yeah, and we also find out at this time, because the cutting between Lucy and Rachel and Nick and the Doctor, that Rachel knows he's an alien.
Yep.
Knows he crash-landed his pod.
Yep.
It's her house. This is due to a real estate business. It's not his money. He hasn't stolen anything. He's been a nice guy. And at the moment, you know, it really does seem like Nick is nice.
Yeah, even though I have to say the love story between them, as in like the origin story of their love, it is of twilight lows. It is tragic. She was walking down the road one day and out stumbles Nick from the hedgerow, tells her he's an alien who just crashed his space pod, and she goes, oh, well, you know what? You can stay in my dad's pub. He has a room above the bar.
Okay, when you put it like that, okay, it does seem a little more Twilight, but bear in mind that I'm viewing this through a soft sepia haze of, you know, the
old classic tale of girl meets alien.
Well, yeah, the pod landed and this suave debonair, played by Nigel Havers, steps out of the pod, wounded and unwell from travelling through the vortex, and he stumbles out and meets this beautiful young woman who's walking down the road, and using his alien charm and charisma, he smiles sweetly at her. She instantly falls in love with his beautiful blue alien eyes, and then they go to the pub owned by her father. And then 30 years later, they're happily married, having had one affair in a house, having a garden party.
Bravo. Bravo.
And then the Tom Odderwock appeared.
Yep. Wait, hang on. Does it appear? No, it doesn't appear. Gordon appears. Gordon turns up at the summer house. And Zimmerman basically tells Flash, listen, this dude and the Chiquita that he came with, they're here to kill Miss Marple. So you need to detain the doctor and I'm going to go off and get the girl. Immediately prior to Gordon having arrived, by the way, Nick revealed his true colors by telling the doctor that he was going to kill him and then also kill Lucy in the most horrific and slow way imaginable.
And bear in mind, though, that he was nice up until that point, and it was only when the doctor threatened to turn off the time loop turned nasty.
Yeah, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we jumped back and forth there a little bit, but anyway, you get the picture.
Meanwhile, the Gordon has restrained the doctor.
Yeah.
Nicked the sonic screwdriver.
Yep.
Nick's got the sonic screwdriver now, and the Tarmadoc has broken into the memorial.
Yeah.
Lucy can see this happening up in the bedroom, and the sky is darkening, and now there's thunder and lightning, and Lucy tells Miss Marple that this is no ordinary storm. So now everyone's heading towards the house. Nick's returned from the summer house. Gordon and the Doctor are heading towards the house. And then, as if by magic, pterodactyls appear.
Yeah, hundreds of them in the sky, presumably in Surrey, and no authorities intervene.
Because it's in a time loop in Surrey, and the only police is Inspector Flash Gordon.
Oh, see, I didn't realise that. That's very clever. Okay, great.
So anyway, Nick turns up to where Rachel and Lucy Miller are, and Lucy's doing her normal thing of trying to go all stabby on Nick, but she can't, because the window shatters and the Tarmadoc arrive.
Yeah, like crashes in through the window. Meanwhile, with Gordon and Doc, Gordon basically doesn't want to let the Doc go at all, but then all of a sudden, a Vortisaur / Tarmadoc, whatever, turn up there as well, and now, obviously, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, so now the two of them have teamed up and are running in a different direction.
So, Rachel's getting worse. Her illness is slowing her down. And Lucy, as she always does in this situation, is taking the side of the, you know, the female who is struggling.
Yeah, you know what? Fair enough. Yeah. In this case, anyway, fair enough.
And basically, Rachel says, right, it's time for no more lies, and she basically tells Nick to go to the mausoleum and stop this, thus really indicating that she knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And she and Lucy will basically hold the Tarmadoc at bay while Nick goes and turns off whatever is going on. And then, you know, Nick says, I love you. I'll come back for you.
Yeah.
So that's those three. But meanwhile...
Flash and Doc, the Vortisaur and Tarmadoc has caught up with them, is about to chow down on some time when the Doctor realizes what he can do. He walks up to the pterodactyl whatever and whistles in its ear. Because as we know, I guess... Actually, no, we do know. We've been told this. They have incredibly acute hearing. So when he whistles into the ear of the Vortisaur, it is temporarily disoriented, throws the Tarmadoc off its back, I think, and they basically buy a little time. So now they're running off again.
Well, the Doctor decides he wants to name it.
Yeah. Here's where we get the reference.
Yeah, he said he used to have one as a pet, so yeah. He's decided to call this one Margaret, which fits slightly with what the Vortisaur in Storm Warning was called.
Yeah, so I read.
Because Charlie in Storm Warning called it Ramsay after Ramsay MacDonald, so he's obviously named this one Margaret after Margaret Thatcher.
Yep.
And then we get my favourite line of the episode, which is from Tom Chadbourne as Gordon, which was...
You want to save the planet, don't you? Solve the crime, make things right?
Yes, but I hadn't envisaged doing it from the back of a giant prehistoric time bat called Margaret.
Yeah, because now they're riding it, which is amazing.
Oh, they are riding into battle on top of Margaret.
Oh, this is so cool. There are some bits of this story where I would just really have liked to just seen this. Some of these elements, story elements, lend themselves very well to a TV episode.
So females, meanwhile, are fleeing and...
are heading towards the stage.
Yes. And Lucy gets hold of the microphone.
Yeah.
So at this point, we have, you know, we know that these have got very sensitive hearing. So the best thing that could happen here is that Lucy gives the microphone to the singer and she sings in Bavarian or Hungarian.
Hungarian.
Hungarian. At them, and we solve the plot through the power of music.
Why is that?
Sadly,
because the music is so terrible and the singing is so dreadful that it will kill anything in its path.
Schadenfreude. But Lucy doesn't do that. So she goes one better, and mentioning that Auntie Pat was a bit of a rock chick.
Oh, Auntie Pat.
Oh, Auntie Pat, how little we knew how important you were back in glam rock. She set up a bit of a feedback loop, and she basically stops the Vortisaurs for a little bit.
Yeah, well done, Lucy.
Meanwhile, Gordon is on top of the Vortisaur, and they see everyone is now heading towards the mausoleum.
Yeah, you say everyone. I've got another question for you, which would otherwise really just feature in my mini-review later on. But where is everyone? Because when we came to this place, to Brideshead's, there was a party going on. There were lots of people there. Where is everyone?
Well, when the storm happened, everyone ran inside the house because they're wearing these light linen suits with chiffon dresses, which are white, with little flowers, possibly lilies or orchids. And they've got those hats that they wear at Ascot. So they went in the house to stop them getting wet.
Yeah, but in the house, yeah, but we've had Tom Motorwalks on atop Vortisaurs crashing in through walls and windows.
Okay, I'm assuming the nice thing, where they're all actually sitting there, hiding in the library, because it's always the library.
Haven't noticed a thing. They're just there.
Having not noticed a thing, but the door is closed, and it's a big wooden door that the Tarmadoc can't get through.
Yeah.
And,
which also isolates them from the noise going on outside. They're sipping tea, maybe occasionally picking a volume or two from the shelves around them, discussing politics and drama, and exchanging witty banter and fun family anecdotes.
But what's actually happened is they've all been eaten.
Oh, probably.
Dead. All of them.
All of them.
All of them. Oh, that's so sad.
Well, actually, have they? We don't know that they have.
We're making this up as we're going along. But this is actually, to be fair, one of the good things about audiobooks. I think, when I'm listening to this, that they survived by huddling in a library. You think that they're all eaten.
I think they've been omitted from the story.
Doesn't make any difference whatsoever. It's the fact that they are either there or they're not. We don't need, for this story, to know what happened to those people. It would be nice to know. But this is 40 minutes.
That's
true. It's not, you know, it's not a two-parter. The pacing on these have to be start, middle, and end. And sadly, sometimes, you know, you can't know everything. But one of the big advantages that I can imagine whatever I want, and no one is going to disagree with me. Well, except you and this podcast and everyone that listens to it. But plot was happening. Where was the plot happening?
Okay, so anyway, yeah. Let's get back to the plot, shall we? Let's leave the happy party attendees in the library. Maybe while the youngest one of the children is reciting a poem from school and the adults in the background are going, where are Tom and Lisa, who played tennis before? Anyway, getting back to the plot, Gordon and the Doctor realize that Margaret is coming in to land. And we get a tiny little cutscene of the Tom Motorwalk leader, sir, saying that he's gotten into the mausoleum, and he says that he has found not only what he came there to, looking for, what he sniffed in the air, but also sort of the origin of their own species, something to do with them, with the Tom Motorwalk as a culture.
Yeah, and they realize that the time loop is being set up by bits of the McDonald's spaceship, and therefore that this entire thing is Nick Zimmerman's doing, because it was in the spaceship that he landed in. It's in his mausoleum. And Nick is at this point now basically begging, no, don't do this. Don't turn it off. Don't turn it off. Gordon has a complete change of heart.
Sorry, I think you're getting ahead of the story a little bit, because when the Tom Motorwalk, he goes up to the machine itself, this gadget that he's after, and wants to take it or turn it off, and then Nick attacks him and threatens the Tom Motorwalk, like tells them, listen, if you don't leave, I'm going to kill your leader. And then Doc and Flash appear and, essentially crash. Like they and Margaret crash.
You know, Margaret would make a really good reoccurring companion at this point, but, you know, it's been so useful to the plot.
Where we get the point where the Doctor says, no, okay, we're going to, I realize now what you've been doing. You've, for some reason, set this up, and I'm going to turn it off before it causes the destruction of the Earth, before it entirely disintegrates the barrier between the real world and the Vortex, and all the Tom Motorwalk come in and kill everyone.
Nick doesn't want it to happen. Gordon, having ridden in on Margaret like Sir Lancelot, finally realizes that he's on the wrong side here, gives the sonic screwdriver back to the Doctor, and hand-waving a few seconds later, the Tarmadoc fade away.
Yeah, which is ambiguous. Like, we don't know, do they fade back into the Vortex, or do they, because they fade out of existence, but is that existence in the real universe, as opposed to the Vortex, or is it in general? Because it's possible that they are unable to live in the real universe, and when he turns off this machine, they basically just cease to exist.
No, I think they go back to the Vortex.
Okay.
So, what happens now is we find out, we get everyone coming back together, Lucy and Rachel, Nick and Gordon, and the Doctor.
Yeah.
And Nick checks up on Rachel.
And it turns out the reason he did this whole thing is because she is dying, and he put up this time loop to experience this one day before she does die. Not necessarily her last day, but when she's still relatively well and surrounded by friends and family forever. That was the idea.
And I think that's actually quite lovely, the reason why he did it.
And it's very possible that he's been Groundhog Day-ing it for millennia.
Yeah, and good on him.
Unaware, though. Unaware.
Yeah, but good on him. He set it up for a good reason. He wasn't to know the outcome. He wasn't to realise that the Tarmadoc would appear. He wasn't to know any of this.
That's true, but he was also not entirely aware of the fact that there was a loop.
No, but he set it up, so he's probably forgotten over that period of time. You know, it's been a very long period of time, and they were forgetting things and not remembering things. And
okay, that is true.
So, you know, he's very unhappy, and they have this lovely, touching moment about that they finally need to both accept that she's going to die, and, you know, forgetting that he's an alien and she's Miss Marple, it's a lovely moment.
It
really is. And so that's happily the end of the episode, and, you know, the Lucy and the Doctor have gone on to other adventures. Or it would be if Catriona Olsen hasn't appeared.
Ah, the headhunter is back. So Lucy and the Doctor, they are temporarily separated. Lucy goes off to the TARDIS and is approached by this woman, the headhunter, who goes, "You have no idea the crap I've gone through to find you." But Lucy doesn't recognize her. And the headhunter goes, "My employer would really like to meet you." And then she shoots Lucy, rendering her unconscious. And then we get
immediately after that, the sound of a TARDIS leaving.
Yeah, a TARDIS, not the TARDIS.
Anyway, the Doctor is in the TARDIS, a bit pissed off because Lucy's taking her time, probably stealing clothes. and we know from a few episodes ago, he cannot leave this time zone without her.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't do it in Blood of the Daleks and couldn't do it in any of that, because they are stuck together.
Yeah.
Due to this Time Lord Witness Protection Program.
Yeah.
And then the cloister bell starts again. And considering that there is no threat to Earth, he knows it has to be a threat to him or the TARDIS.
Or Lucy.
And he starts calling out for Lucy. And that's where the episode ends, leading into Human Resources next week.
Oh, I cannot wait, which is a two-parter as well.
It's a two-parter. It finishes off the Lucy Miller arc, but she's still got three more seasons. It finishes off the Lucy Miller mystery.
Yeah, the who the hell is Lucy plot line.
So, no more lies. It's your mini review. Yeah.
Actually, I think I started last week. Do you want to do this?
Okay. Yep. Absolutely. I think it's probably quite a bit obvious. I actually really liked this story. It's very different from the episodes that come before it. And it's the first of these audiobooks that we've looked at, which used time travel as a central conceit to the story.
Yeah.
And it's very much like Immortal Beloved, which I also really liked. This was a love story with a science fiction plot wrapped around it. I really liked the Foley. And you're right that at some points on the spaceship, it was probably a bit too loud. But I felt that was necessary to contrast it with the garden party. The Vortisaurs, the actual garden party music, the noise of the storm when it is oncoming, you know, the Tarmadoc, all of that was really good. The incidental music, the violins and the piano playing in between scenes was quite beautifully done. It is very reminiscent of sort of a 1950s, 1960s garden party.
Yeah.
The cast are amazingly brilliant. Unlike last week, they're actually given intelligent, well-written dialogue as well as actually being great cast. And the Doctor and Lucy once more have some witty banter this week about her backside. Now, I have no problem with Hungarian singing. It didn't go on. It didn't go on for too long. It was in two particular short snippets. And Julia McKenzie, if that was actually Julia McKenzie singing, has quite a lovely voice. I didn't care what she was singing. So overall, no more lies. I'm giving a 3.9. Now, that, again, it's one of those where, you know, 3.9 out of 5 doesn't sound like I, you know, loved it as much as I seem to have done from the review, but it's one of those where I'm trying to leave some in the 4 range for some of the things which I know are coming up. And it's a good episode. It's enjoyable to listen to, and it certainly gets a highly recommended if you want to listen to it.
Nice. I'm giving this 3.9 as well. I really enjoy this story. I think the acting is fantastic. The guest cast are of an incredibly high caliber, and they're, as you said, they're allowed to actually act. They're not just there turning up to play some stupid Hulk on Phobos. You have all the ingredients of a very, very good story, while at the same time actually just delivering a very neat, very compact little storyline. It's almost like this fantastic little Doctor Who arrow that is pointing at the next double feature, which is going to be amazing, and you know that it's going to be amazing, but it's not fluff the way that Phobos was. This is a tiny episode that is very interesting, and it's also very interesting because it plays with time in a way that we haven't really seen before, or sorry, that we haven't heard before, not in these Eighth Doctor adventures anyway. So given that we're listening and absorbing the storyline of a time traveler, instead of just having an episode where they happen to be in a particular space and time and they have a local adventure, they have an adventure that is based around the concept of time travel and the dangers thereof as well, and of tampering with time. So it's actually getting, from a sci-fi point of view, it's getting more elaborate and more, well, deeper, I guess, and more interesting. So yes, love it. Love the banter between all parties present. I love the banter between Doc and Lucy. I love the banter between Flash and Nick. And I thought Miss Marple was great. I may have emphasized my disliking of her singing, quote-unquote, talents a little bit too much. But you know what? I stand by it. I think the song was utter garbage. But I will Google the lyrics, and I have no doubt that it is a beautiful poem. Yeah, 3.9. I cannot wait to get to the next one. And yes, please do listen to this one. It is fantastic.
You know, I think so far, you know, we've only said two of them that we haven't really liked.
Yeah, Glam Rock and Phobos.
And this is a story that would hold up on television.
Definitely.
And I would love to have seen it. It's one of those ones which probably couldn't be done on a television budget. It's, you know, the hordes of Vortisaurs being ridden by Tarmadoc, you know, going across the sky and hiring Julie McKenzie. Probably couldn't be done on a television budget. So, you know, I thought it was for an audiobook, it was audibly very good. Hungarian song aside, the actual sounds of the garden party, you can imagine being there.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing, and actually this isn't even a point of criticism, the only thing that you're left wanting, or that I was left wanting, was, I guess, a prequel. I wanted to know what was the chase after Zimmerman that culminated with the start of this story. That's the only thing.
I agree that it would have been nice. And when I was listening to it, because as I said, I only listened to this one once. I was going through it expecting that this time loop would end at some point with them going onto the spaceship.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that would have been a really nice touch.
It didn't. So we will never find out how this episode began. But, you know, it's one of those where the Doctor and Lucy obviously have a lot of adventures between these published stories.
Yeah.
So, you can sit there and imagine it.
Yeah.
So, overall, No More Lies, go and listen to it. And next week, two-parter Human Resources, where everything is coming to a head and Lucy Miller is in the centre of absolutely everything.
I cannot wait. I haven't listened to it yet. It's going to be awesome.
So that's it?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it must be very, very clear to you, if you don't already, you need to listen to more of JD's thoughts. How can you do that, you ask? Well, let me tell you. You can follow this man on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K, Nespa. I am at Ponkin, in case you're curious about what's going on in my subconscious. In the meantime, why don't you subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes? I would love you to do that. JD is not going to tell you, but he would love you to do that as well. And like us on Facebook, like us or follow us or subscribe to us or whatever it's called on Google Plus. That's plus.google.com/plus who back when or something like that. And yeah, check out the website, whobackwhen.com.
Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Reddit, iTunes, just say hello to us on all of them.
Yeah, please do. We'll say hello back. Until next time.
I'm JD, and I still don't have a catchphrase.
Oh, you need a catchphrase.
And you need a jingle.
I do. Okay, yeah, touche. Shamalama ding dong, people. I need to change that one up. Cha chow.
Who back when? Bye.
Who back when?